All right. Thanks, everyone, for staying. I know it's getting late in the afternoon. First, I want to apologize for my fonts on this PowerPoint, because converting from Mac PowerPoint to PC did not do me any favors in that regard. So today we're going to be talking about some work that we're doing in the Northeast looking at some alternative beef production systems. And just as an introduction, today we've had a really nice overview of some of the large-scale ecological impacts that we associate with beef production both in the U.S. and globally, and a projected increase in global beef demand is threatening to make this situation even worse. And in research and in industry efforts, there's been a lot of focus on improving productivity, improving efficiency as strategies to reduce the environmental impacts of these systems. And while those approaches are very important, I would argue that we also need to be thinking about transformative strategies to move toward real system sustainability for beef and livestock systems more generally. And to that end, in our work, we're looking at two different production systems in the northeastern United States. The first is a dairy beef production system, and the second is a grazing production system. And our rationale for looking at these systems was very nicely summed up in a recent review of life cycle assessments of beef production systems. So on the dairy beef side, a recent review found that these systems may have the greatest potential to mitigate the environmental impacts of beef. And this is largely because of the multifunctionality of dairy systems, because you have a system where you're producing both milk and beef outputs, and you are dividing the burdens accordingly among the outputs. And then on the grazing side, the grass-fed beef side, the use of marginal land for grazing may be really efficient in terms of land use from a food security perspective when we think about how to feed a growing population on a finite land base, in addition to the other potential ecological benefits of perennial agricultural systems. So the goal and scope for this study, we're, as I said, looking at two Northeast regional systems. Our grass-fed beef system is a MIG, a management-intensive grazing system, where the animals are rotated very frequently on the landscape at a high stock density, which I'll talk about later. And then a dairy beef production system, where the calves from dairies go to an intensive kind of feedlot-based system. And we're looking at a system boundary that goes all the way from cradle to farm gate, or in the dairy beef systems, multiple farm gates because there are multiple nodes of production. The impacts we consider in our analysis, I'm going to talk about the underlying ones today, but we look at land use, water use, fossil energy use, global warming potential, eutrophication potential, and acidification potential, so really trying to get a big picture look at these systems. And then the functional unit that we're using for our analysis is a kilogram of hot carcass weight beef, and the functional unit is supposed to convey the purpose or the function of the system in question. This is the unit that's most often used in the literature. However, we also look at impacts on a per kilogram of protein and energy basis, because a good argument could be made that the function of these systems is to provide human nutrition. In terms of methods, the foundation for this analysis is a herd-level livestock life cycle feed and land requirements model developed by Christian Peters and colleagues. This is an open source model. It's spreadsheet-based, and it's used for multiple livestock products, but we are obviously focusing on dairy and beef. And we've extended this model to calculate herd emissions to soil, water, and air. This model was originally developed at the national scale, and we've parameterized it with region-specific data on crop yields, using special tabulations of regionally representative surveys for dairy in particular, by conducting interviews with industry experts and cooperative extension. And then after we had developed our baseline models, we did a final calibration with a small sample of producer data from both types of systems. In terms of emissions estimation, for volatile solids, nitrogen, and phosphorus excretion, we use the ASABE standards for manure production and characteristics. We're using Tier 2 emissions methods for enteric and manure methane. For pasture and for other feeds, we're using a Tier 1 methodology. And for other processes that are not modeled directly, those emissions are embedded in a database that's used commonly for life cycle assessment. And our analysis is actually done, well, it's partially done in spreadsheet modeling, and then all of that data is moved into an analysis software called OpenLCA, which is also open source. And we use a method called Recipe Midpoint to move from inventory estimation to impact assessment. The study systems we're looking at, very briefly. So on the top, we have the dairy beef system. It's about a 300-head cow breeding herd. On the bottom, we have the grass-fed beef system. It's about a 30-head cow breeding herd. The dairy beef system, these animals are finishing in about 16 months, whereas on the grass-fed beef side, they're finishing in about 24 months. The grass-fed system is a 100% grass-based, grass and hay and baleage-based system with some mineral mix, whereas the feeds that we see in the dairy and dairy beef system are much more varied. They include silages, hays, concentrates, mineral mix, et cetera. And I should also notice that when you're dealing with them, I should also mention that when you're dealing with a multifunctional system like dairy, we have to figure out how to partition the emissions between milk and beef. And we used a method developed by Greg Thoma and colleagues that uses a biophysical approach based on energy content of feeds and what the feeds are used for inside of the animal to partition between milk and beef. And we ended up with an allocation of 9.3% of the dairy system burdens going to dairy beef, which is in line with what others have done in the literature. So some preliminary results. This is a work in progress. We see that on the left-hand side here, we have the dairy beef system, right-hand side, grass-fed beef system. Almost three times as high emissions in the grass-fed beef system, which is what I was actually expecting. And in both systems, the managed manure and enteric methane are the majority contributors to global warming potential. And within that category, we see that enteric methane is the majority contributor for both systems, and that's in line with literature and just general trends in the sector for greenhouse gas emissions. Comparing our results to other studies, we've seen similar results around the U.S. So for grass-fed beef, a study in the Northern Great Plains and the Midwest found similar results. Actually quite interesting, this study right here in the Northern Great Plains had a much shorter finishing time, but we have really similar emissions. So that's a potential opportunity for process improvement in this grass-fed system to reduce emissions even further. And then on the dairy beef side, Stackhouse Lawson and colleagues did this study in California. We see very similar emissions for dairy beef here. Another impact category we've looked at is land use. I've added a third system to the mix for comparison's sake here, so I'll just walk you through this. On the left-hand side, we have the results of a conventional national-scale U.S. beef production system as modeled by Peters and colleagues in the baseline formulation of the livestock model that was published that we're using in this study, which is how I can compare one-to-one. And on the left-hand side, we have square meters per 1,000 kilocalories used in the system and then square meters per 100 grams of protein used in the system. And to our surprise, initially, we find that this Northeast grass-fed system uses less land than the conventional U.S. beef production system, and that the Northeast dairy beef system uses about 90% less land than a conventional U.S. beef production system. And you'll notice in both of these categories, most of the land use is for, it's hard to see, but this is the brownest hay, and this is grazed pasture. So most is forages. Down here, almost half of the land use in both categories is for concentrate feed, so there's a difference there. And I should say that the greater land use efficiency we see here in this pasture system, it has a higher feed quality than the national scale system that's modeled here, and there's also a much higher harvest efficiency used in the system and a higher stock density. That's really what's driving that difference there. And then finally, we'll talk about water a little bit, results for eutrophication potential. These are reported in phosphate equivalent emissions, which is essentially a combination of marine and freshwater eutrophication potential. And we see a very large difference between the dairy beef and the grass-fed beef production systems here. For dairy beef, in comparison, I couldn't find a comparison to other studies in the U.S. for dairy beef. However, for grass-fed beef, we see a range of between 35 to almost 300 grams of phosphate equivalent emissions per hot carcass weight for this grass-fed system. At the high end, I think there was some double counting for manure happening in this study, which is why this is really high. The low end, this is in an arid production system where nitrate leaching is going to be much less of an issue than it is in the Northeast where we're much more humid. And so I wanted to dive a little bit into these results to see what was driving this difference. And so looking only at, that was P and N emissions, this is N only emissions. Looking at the difference on the left-hand side per kilogram of hot carcass weight between grass-fed beef and dairy beef here, you'll see that the grazed pasture is the huge chunk of this for grass-fed beef. And this is really driven by a higher leaching fraction in our region and also potential nitrate leaching under pastures because, as I mentioned, these are actually fairly intensively managed grazing systems where point-in-time stock densities may be anywhere from 9,000 pounds per acre to 180,000 pounds per acre. So they're really intensively using the land, and that's at a point in time, which may have implications for groundwater under pastures. And so this is a per kilogram of carcass weight comparison. And I also ran the numbers on a per hectare comparison to see if the results would change. And to my surprise, they did not change. Dairy beef still had a lower potential N emission on a per hectare basis than this grass-fed beef. This was a really interesting finding to me and also a potential trade-off when we think about grazing systems and improving land use efficiency, but also potentially having a trade-off when we think about nutrient loading to water. So in conclusion, I already just gave away a little bit of my conclusion there, but for dairy beef, we saw the best environmental performance between the two systems on the presented indicators went to dairy beef. However, we're also looking at fossil energy use and water use, and dairy beef is a pretty intensive water user just preliminarily, so that may change the calculus a little bit when we think about that. On the grass-fed side, as I said, this intensive use of land may have a nutrient loading cost to the environment, but this is a preliminary finding. We need to follow up on this with maybe some process modeling and maybe experimental data. And just as a preliminary conclusion, we could think about optimizing the finishing time, reducing the time to finish, which would reduce the total manure put into this system. Because these animals, as someone else said earlier, these animals are on pasture year-round. And so that may have beneficial ammonia benefits, as was mentioned earlier, but it could also have this potential issue related to nitrate. So optimizing finishing time could be a way to handle some of that. Our next steps for this analysis are to run sensitivity analyses, looking at key parameters like time to finish, pasture carbon sequestration, because in this baseline assessment, pasture carbon was assumed to be in equilibrium, and also looking at the impact of allocation. So for example, that dairy to beef allocation, looking at the impact that has on our final results. In terms of magnitude of differences. So that's it. I'd like to acknowledge my committee members, Tim Griffin, my committee chair is here. Also financial support I've received for this research, and not on here, but all who should also be included are the numerous farmers and folks in Extension who have helped me out with this research and contributed very greatly. So thank you so much for your attention. Yeah.
So grass-fed pasture beef would probably be considered a niche market, and the dairy would be probably hamburger market.
Well, the dairy call meat would be hamburger market or like low-grade steakhouse, but the calves are not. That's high-quality beef.
Okay. So anyway, have you considered the marketability of the beef in your analysis?
I've considered the marketability of beef in future analyses because I think this could be a potential niche market for folks who are smaller scale and want to develop a side business aside from their milk production. I think that is something that we should explore in the future. Did that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
Since you do it's a life cycle analysis in a very comprehensive, do you see the future, the picture I've raised in my book, see the future, the level of the meat? You know, we still talking about, as I said, we don't have any level of the meat which you want more sustainable produce. So would you see the future of that? Have a food level?
I think there's food labeling definitely has a role to play in improving the sustainability of the system. Do I think it's sufficient to get us to agricultural sustainability? Absolutely not, because consumers are not willing to pay for the total ecological burdens of our agricultural production. But it's definitely a tool in the toolbox that I think is important, but there are other tools as well.
You see, like consumers are willing to pay more for organic food, which has no scientific evidence is more sustainable. So the consumers are willing to pay more. So is our scientific community a failure? We do not communicate the message out. Why consumers pay more for organic food, although no scientific evidence is more sustainable?
Interesting point. Yes.
Yeah, if you comment about the land, I guess the footprint of the land used in D.C. was surprised that in the Northeast it was less land used compared to the rest of the other, the most difficult system. And
yeah.
You attributed that to forage quality. Curious about, for that comparison, so what would be the other system typically made up as part of the forage resource?
Yeah. So part of it is forage quality. The other part of it is the way the system is managed. So it's an intensive rotational grazing system. So they're using a smaller land base to start with, whereas the other system that was modeled here is sort of a mixture of extensive rangeland grazing or more extensive continuous grazing on pastures, not this kind of more rotational system. So at this bar right here, a lot of this land is the breeding herd, maintaining the breeding herd. So we're thinking about, you know, cow-calf operations like where you're working in Oklahoma and the West and whatnot. So they're just using a much larger land base and continuously grazing. That's kind of the difference.